Welcome to the People and Performance Podcast, featuring guest experts from such global brands as NASA, Salesforce, the Milwaukee Bucks, Staples Professional, IBM, Mutual of America, Xero, and Simon Sinek Inc. The show offers expert insights into the strategic capabilities and behaviors needed to grow and sustain employee performance.
Virtual reality technology has come on leaps and bounds over the last few years, and now has the potential to revolutionize business. While commonly associated with entertainment and gaming, the impact of VR on the employee experience and performance levels this decade could be significant. Leaders and HR pros have an opportunity, therefore, to embrace the power of VR and enhance engagement, training, and overall output. In this episode of the People and Performance Podcast, we delve into the ways that VR can improve things within organizations, such as aiding with immersive and interactive employee training, creating lifelike simulations that facilitate faster learning, increase retention, and improve skill development. Joining me, Bill Banham, and Chris Buehling on the podcast today to highlight some of the exciting possibilities of VR and its impact on the workplace is VR advocate Matt Burns. By leveraging the power of VR, says Matt, HR pros can unlock the potential for improved employee experiences and elevated performance levels. Matt is the host and executive producer of the Thinking Inside the Box podcast. He's also value advisory at Ceridian and founder at Bento HR, a digital transformation consultancy working at the intersection of strategy, technology, operations, and human capital to accelerate value creation. Chris and I hope that you enjoyed this episode of the People and Performance Podcast. And as always, if you do, please remember to like, comment, and subscribe. Matt Burns, you fantastic human being. Chris and I are delighted to welcome you to the People and Performance Podcast today.
Fantastic is a high bar, Bill, but I will do my best to meet it.
Matt, for those who may not have seen your content on LinkedIn or other socials, why don't you start by sharing a little bit about your background, experiences, and what you get up to today?
Well, you know, Bill, having known me for a few years now, that the thing I enjoy doing least is talking about myself. But I think in the purpose of creating a good podcast, I'll indulge the question. My name is Matt Burns. I've spent 20 years in the corporate world, 15 of those in HR, the last five spent as an HR executive. I've dabbled in everything from virtual reality to augmented reality, artificial intelligence, and lately find myself helping organizations build business cases for change.
Wonderful. So a little while ago, I got a message from you on WhatsApp, and it was just a little video of you. I think you were in Bali, and you're like, "Love from Bali," and I'm like, "Oh man, I'm so jealous." And you've recently been a bit of a traveler, visiting places like Singapore, Bali, New York, London. I'm quite curious to understand what you've been up to over the last little while in terms of your trips, but also particularly you mentioned to me that you did a visit to Lego's HQ in beautiful Denmark. What was the reason for your visit there, and what did you learn from your time in Denmark?
Yeah, like talk about bucket list adventures, going to Lego's HQ in Billund, Denmark, you know, the epicenter of play. It was phenomenal, Bill. I was there for about 2 days with 75 of Europe's senior HR leaders having conversations around the future of work, analytics, augmented reality, among other topics. And I had the opportunity and the privilege to MC that event over 2 days. And we had a chance to, of course, have many content sessions, but also had a chance to meet over meals. And if I don't mind saying myself, had a chance to explore the halls of Lego, which was absolutely incredible. You know, I think I went into the experience with very high expectations. I can remember playing with Lego from a young child all the way through to today. And my impressions of the Lego culture has always been one of play, of innovation, of a strong employment culture. And I would think in that regard, my expectations were met. I had a chance to connect with several of Lego's HR executives, folks that were across all parts of that, spectrum, also had a chance to connect with other leaders, as I mentioned, and see it through their eyes. And collectively, we were just so impressed with how the organization has innovated, how it's evolved. I was surprised to learn that during the pandemic, the organization almost didn't make it, that they became close to actually having to shut the doors because of many of the challenges that organizations like us had to face. But they came through on the other side, stronger for the experience, and delivered a record-setting financial year. What surprised me, though, is that the more we dug into Lego and their culture and how they view the future of work, I was surprised to hear, Bill, that they're experiencing many of the same challenges that other organizations that I talked to are. They're having challenges in embedding hybrid work, despite the fact they have an incredible showpiece of an office. They're trying to navigate the nuances between what different leaders prefer in terms of leadership styles. Some leaders prefer their employees to be in the office 5 days a week. Some are quite comfortable with it being fully remote and having to navigate the nuances of their executive team. But also just thinking about how, as an organization, they're always playing with the tension of how do they introduce play and deliver strong financial results. So I thought, just understanding that, it was nice to see, almost reassuring in a way, to know that even organizations as powerful and as compelling and as innovative as Lego, they're experiencing the same problems the rest of us are.
Matt, you're passionate about the potential of virtual reality in organizations. What's the origin story of this passion?
The pandemic. It was 2020 spring, and like a lot of us, I was holed up in my little apartment and asking myself, what am I going to do with all this time? I wasn't able to travel and see clients in their offices. My team was dispersed around the world, and I suddenly had a lot more free time on my hands. So I actually bought three things, and I don't mind saying this, Chris. The first thing I bought was a PlayStation. I thought my younger brother and I would be able to bond and commiserate about our childhood memories over video games. So I bought a PlayStation for us to, play some video games there. I bought a guitar, thinking I might be able to finally scratch the itch of becoming a musician. And I bought a virtual reality headset. Well, we flash forward 3 years later, and I can tell you, of those three, the only thing I picked up was that virtual reality headset. And the moment I put it on, I was absolutely blown away by how compelling the technology was to solve many of the challenges that I experienced as an HR executive. How do you build culture in a space where your teams are more remote, where they're more dispersed, where they're more disconnected than ever? How do you bridge the gap of things like equity and inclusion for employees that are not able to participate because of any number of impediments to their involvement? And how do you solve many of the challenges around traditional corporate learning, where most organizations are still leaning on very traditional, very tired approaches of PowerPoints, recitation, memorization, lectures, that we all know that as adults is not effective, but yet we place so much of our energy and resources into making them real, that when I put on that headset for the first time, I was just struck by how this could really solve a lot of problems facing organizations today. And since that time, I've had a chance to be involved in a number of different endeavors, not the least of which was a virtual reality conference in 2020. We partnered with Microsoft to put on a three-day event where we had 60 speakers from all around the world, many of which were HR executives. And we had 400 participants in virtual reality headsets, 800 in total. The full three-day conference was hosted in virtual reality, broadcast simultaneously on live stream. And we talked about all these use cases and many, many more. And since that time, I've been helping organizations try and navigate the complex and often confusing world of virtual reality and how it can be deployed in a number of use cases. And I'm doing more of that today.
Excellent. I love that. There are a couple things I love in your genesis of this is that you talked about the PlayStation for your brother, too. It was funny during COVID, my son, I kept having to harp on him because, they're home all the time. I said, did you do your homework? Did you do your homework? And he said, yeah. But he ended up like in the top 2% and playing Call of Duty or something like that. So it's interesting. You switched and went to the virtual headset and focused more in that area. So anyway, I think a lot of us got new talents during that time period. So this is cool. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about VR, the virtual reality and how it's being utilized in HR resources today. And can you share some examples from organizations that you've worked with that have successfully implemented some VR in their HR practices and kind of, what kind of results have you seen from it?
It's a great question, because I think there's often some misnomers from organizations and from their leaders around what are the actual use cases for VR. You mentioned gaming, Chris, and I think that's when most of us think about virtual reality. We think about our teenagers in the basement playing Call of Duty, playing other types of gaming applications. But there's so much more than that. And we're seeing organizations as disparate as Walmart to Yum Brands, which includes KFC, Boeing, and they're each using virtual reality in a bit of a different way. I think the best way to describe the umbrella value that they all derive is any interaction in an enterprise context where you're trying to increase the level of intimacy, but do not benefit from co-location is an incredible use case of virtual reality. So you think about the talent lifecycle. You think about important critical inflection points like hiring and recruiting, where you may not be able to meet with your candidates face-to-face, though many leaders prefer it, but you don't want to rely solely on two-dimensional video mechanisms like Zoom or Teams, but you want to have that immersive feeling because you want to get a broader sense of the candidate's suitability in your organization. I think about things like onboarding. And again, this is an employee's first impression as far as the organization is concerned. You want to have that be, yes, engaging, but you also want to make sure you have high levels of knowledge retention, which brings me to my third example, corporate learning. As I mentioned earlier, most adults, in fact, I can't think of one that I know, learns through the model of memorization, recitation, lectures, and PowerPoints. We are experiential learners, and virtual reality offers the opportunity for learners of all stripes and shapes and sizes and industries and backgrounds and languages to be able to participate in experiential opportunities that can, yes, increase knowledge retention, but also increase engagement and connectedness to the organization. And we talk about certain use cases. McDonald's, for example, has been using virtual reality in their training programs, both for management and employees, to do what I just mentioned. Because at the scale of these operations, the capital investment of virtual reality pays itself off several times over when you think about knowledge retention and engagement. If you can accelerate somebody's path to productivity by 10, 15, 20%, and add that up over hundreds, if not thousands, if not millions of employees, the business case becomes really compelling. By a similar token, you see organizations like Boeing overlay virtual reality and augmented reality in things like manufacturing. I mean, I wouldn't even begin to know how to assemble a jet engine on a Boeing 737, but with the power of technology, you can actually put glasses over your real environment, and it can give you a step-by-step instruction on what piece goes where, what you should do. And it actually takes you through a step-by-step analysis of what steps you need to go through. And then it can sign off on, was it completed properly, which is an incredible advantage for a workforce that's going to have to be increasingly upskilled and reskilled, especially in today's world where we're seeing constant innovation around technology. So those are a couple of examples. I could list many, many more, but again, I would just stress the fact that it's for those interactions, for those locations where you're trying to increase that intimacy, but you don't have the benefits of all being in the same room.
Matt, it all sounds marvelous, but are there any possible drawbacks or challenges when incorporating VR into HR practices, and how can they be mitigated? I mean, one example of a potential drawback, I guess, is the price.
Yeah, well, I think that's another misnomer. I mean, you look at the current market today, and depending on the use case, Bill, you can get a virtual reality headset at retail for about £300, which is about a quarter of the price of a smartphone. So putting things in context is actually not that expensive. Where it becomes more expensive is from a software perspective, because if you're going to develop learning programs and you're going to develop use cases in more of a customized way, there simply isn't the available library of content that you would find on LinkedIn Learning or Open Sesame if you want to buy off-the-shelf training programs. In most cases, you're going to have to build those programs yourself, and that would come with a significant amount of production costs. But again, depending on the size of the use case, that could become actually a really strong investment. I think the other issue around virtual reality really is one of adoption. Because of the aforementioned bias that people have towards its, you know, utility and its efficacy and its relevancy in their organizations, most people dismiss it out of hand without really understanding what they're saying no to. And I get it. If you haven't had exposure to what I'm talking about, I can sound as passionate as I want and blab on as long as I possibly can. But until you put on that virtual reality headset for the first time, I'm just basically talking in a different language. So I would encourage individuals that have even the modicum of curiosity to find a headset in your community, whether that's, you know, your children or perhaps friends of your children, or even make the investment yourself in that 300 pound or 300 US dollar price point and just give it a shot. Because I think that you would find that once you put it on, that you're going to be blown away not only by the present day, but also its use cases. I mean, Bill, here's one thing I would offer as a proof point. We put 60 speakers in virtual reality headsets. 58 of them had never been in a headset before the conference. Of the 58 speakers that put on a headset for the first time, if we were to trace them now 3 years later, 15, so that's close to 25% of those individuals, have taken virtual reality and introduced it into their large enterprise organizations. That is an incredible amount of conversion for really something we didn't anticipate being a knock-on effect of the conference, but it just shows that once you've had the experience, people can make the compelling business case for change. The one thing I'll just add, Bill, is from a practicality perspective, virtual reality is not meant to replace in-person interactions. I am not going to sit here and advocate for a world where we sit in our homes all day long, put on VR headsets, and never leave our houses. That is not a life worth living. That's not enriching. And we would lose a lot in terms of human and social interaction. But there are many use cases where we don't necessarily need to leave the house. We may be having a team meeting, maybe a performance management conversation. There could be a one-on-one coaching session where we would benefit from being in the same room, but it doesn't make sense for me to fly to Toronto or London, England or Munich, Germany. The cost, the time for a one-hour conversation. So it doesn't make sense to necessarily undertake that face-to-face interaction. But we lose something when we revert to mediums like Zoom or Slack or text message. It's asynchronous, it's two-dimensional, it's not immersive, it's not intimate. So think of virtual reality as a use case that is kind of halfway in between. And I think that's an important distinction to make. I'm talking about using virtual reality as one of many tools for communication and learning in an organization. And finding the right use cases and making those business cases for that change is ultimately how you're going to have success.
For organizations considering the adoption of VR in their HR practices, what advice would you offer to ensure a smooth and successful implementation in 60 seconds or less? Go.
Start small and figure out the biggest pain point, whether it is bringing leaders together. I would start at the executive level. I would bring leaders together and have an executive offsite for 2 hours in virtual reality. You're going to save money in the sense of bringing those leaders together in the same room. You're going to give them a unique experience. And you're going to have a whole bunch of people excited about the potential, and their brains and creative muscles will be spinning into a number of use cases that you'll be having a harder time managing and measuring than you will be in getting adoption.
The question we have now, I have two questions for you. And we ask these of all of our participants. So we're at that point in time where we're winding down your technical aspects of what you do and how you do it and why you do it, which has been brilliant. We loved it. But the questions now are going to be ones that really relate to you. And so the first one is this: in a minute or less, can you share one piece of advice or some direction you were given to by a mentor, leader, or colleague that inspired you to perform at a higher level in your career?
I was really lucky. My very first role in HR, I was given a one-year maternity leave replacement. And I had a leader that said, Matt, over the course of your career, you're going to receive many opportunities to try and do different things. And when you're given the choice between money and experiences, always choose experiences, because the money will come as a consequence of the experiences that you have, the lessons that you learn, and the credibility that you'll have as a result.
That's a great piece of advice. That's good wisdom all should have. So that's wonderful. All right, last question for you here, from me. From a culture and people processes perspective, what does a high-performing company mean to you?
Well, that's a great question. I think about a couple things for me. I think first about alignment. I think alignment is absolutely critical in having those things be effective. If you have misalignment between people, process, technology, strategy, you're going to run into issues somewhere through your value chain. So alignment is first and foremost. I also think about the idea of crowdsourcing or leveraging all the voices around the proverbial table. So that means engaging your employees for their feedback, engaging stakeholders across the organization. We are in a world now that's evolving so rapidly that we benefit from broad scale collection of feedback, and therefore that inclusive, diverse approach to problem solving will ultimately lead to better answers.
Matt, one last question for you for today. It's a doozy. How can folks connect with and learn more about you?
Well, you know, Bill, I basically live on LinkedIn. So check me out, MattMVR on LinkedIn. I post multiple times each week. I'm also available for questions and comments. We encourage folks to follow me. Send me a direct message. We'd be happy to engage on these topics or any other ones.
And if your relationship then builds with Matt, you may eventually get to the point, like me, where you're WhatsApp friends and then he shares these videos of all these exciting places he goes to and just makes you jealous. I'll tell you. Matt, thanks very much for joining Chris and I today. This has been a good chat.
Thanks, Matt.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the People and Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please remember to like, comment, and subscribe.